Welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball. It's Cubs Cards season, 7 games in the span of about a little less than 2 weeks, and it's their first meetings of the season. To get all the information on the Cubs and to talk a lot about where the rivalry is and what a fascinating this year for how the rivalry might change, I go to Chicago Tribune baseball writer and Cubs beat writer Megan Montemuro. We talk about a quote from Nolan Arenado that I'm about to share right now and whether or not the Cubs feel the same way. Cue the quote, then cue the music.
I like playing baseball like this, you know, against the Cubs. Games matter, you know. Like, I mean, as you get older, that's what you want to play for. You don't want to play games just to play games, you know. Individually, I've accomplished some things in this game, and I just want to accomplish something team-oriented, special, and win a World Series. So, like, games like this, you know, it's easy to wake up. You know, this is the most excited I've come to the ballpark for this series in about 2 years. So, you know, it's just fun playing games like this against the Cubs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined today, and I'm thrilled to do so by the Chicago Tribune's baseball writer, Cubs beat writer, Megan Montemuro. How long have you been? You were with the Phillies, covering the Phillies there in Philadelphia, and now is it 4 years on the Cubs? Do I have that right?
Yeah, so my career, I initially started working for a suburban paper outside of Chicago, covering Cubs, White Sox from like 2011 to 2014. And then I was in Philly from 2014 through 2020. So this is season 5 back in Chicago with the Tribune. Yeah,
back home, right?
Yeah.
Chance to be work back home. What did baseball coverage in the Tribune mean to you and the Sun-Times mean to you as you grew up and then started your career?
Oh, I mean, it was definitely the dream job. You know, once I knew I wanted to write about baseball, I grew up reading the Tribune. My grandpa and his brother worked at the Tribune.
That's cool.
So I grew up, you know, reading Mark Gonzalez, Paul Sullivan, and, you know, having a chance to share the press box with them and then obviously be Paul Sullivan's colleague and learn from him. I mean, it's been a great experience. And then obviously Cubs fans are very passionate, win or lose. And so, you know, it's fun knowing, you know, what you write is enjoyed by a lot of fans. A little bit more when the team is doing well. So it's been an interesting 3 months for sure.
For sure. It's been, and not once in those 3 months have the Cardinals and Cubs played each other. We're here in late June. They got 7 games together over a 2-week period, but these are also the first games that they're playing against each other. You've completed the NL Central circuit. Now we've all seen all of the teams now that the Cubs have played the Cardinals, I believe, I think I did that right. First time they played this late in the season for the first time in 28 years. What do you make of the NL Central race? It's been the Cubs really pulling away ever since they started earlier than everybody else there and playing in Japan. Now that you've seen everybody, what do you make of the race in the division?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, you look at the Brewers, I mean, I think you have to respect what they've done the last few years. And,
sure.
You know, I think you can't count them out until they're actually dethroned from the top of the division. And obviously, when you look at some of the pitching Milwaukee has, that obviously is always going to make them a threat. And then the Cardinals, I mean, coming into the year, obviously you could speak better to this, but like, I think they were an afterthought. It really felt like it was Cubs Brewers at the top of the division. And so it's been really interesting getting a look in person these last few days. I mean, it seems like their left-handed hitters can do no wrong against Cubs pitching. So it's been interesting, and, you know, pitching has been healthy for St. Louis, and that goes a long way. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Cubs maybe have, you could argue, more star power, or just at least what they've been doing offensively with Kyle Tucker, Pete Crow Armstrong, Seiya Suzuki. I think the other teams have a hard time matching that middle of the lineup kind of part. But pitching wise, I mean, as it's been seen in this series, like, they have some weaknesses for the Cubs in the rotation. Now, getting Shota Imanaga back is huge, but they know Justin Steele's not coming back this year, so it'll be really interesting to see what they ultimately do at the trade deadline.
Yeah, absolutely, and I thought Craig Counsell's reaction to the question about how the group of pitchers have done in the 7 weeks without Justin Steele, without Shota, what they've done. And he was like, well, they showed up. I mean, I know that's like kind of glib, but he's not wrong. I mean, showing up is a huge deal for a rotation that can create a contender just by showing up. But it also isn't really a whole lot of praise for the group, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think Matthew Boyd
has been great.
Yeah, I mean, he's been incredible. He's been exactly what they were hoping he would be after, you know, what they saw he did in Cleveland the last 2 months of last year. But yeah, I mean, they need more. I mean, Jameson Taillon had a 6-week stretch where he was pretty incredible, and now he's had basically his two worst back-to-back starts in, you know, since like his second year in the majors. So who's going to step up beyond Shota is a big question mark. And, you know, they have some, you know, young arms. Kate Horton's been impressive. It'll be interesting, though, to see, like, they really need another top of the rotation starter, and that is not going to come cheap, and a lot of teams are going to be looking for that.
Yeah, and they'll be looking to the Cardinals in part to see if they're going to trade or if they're going to hold. We're recording this before the final game of the four-game series, right in the middle of this seven-game kind of cluster of Cardinals-Cubs. So we don't know, as we're talking, which direction this series is going to go. But I'm wondering what the reaction of the Cubs was of the first two games of the series. Boyd goes out there and pitches a tremendous game. They win 8-0. The power caught up with them after 2 days of the Cardinals' power and really some opportunistic offense, thinking of scoring from second on the sacrifice fly, helped the Cardinals win the first two games. What was the Cubs' kind of reaction to that? Because they come in here, you know, the better team in the standings, the better team in name brand, as you mean, the better team in expectations, the better team in a lot of ways, and then they, you know, lost first two games.
Yeah, after that second loss, I was talking to Nico Horner post game, you know, because it was, I think Cubs had lost 5 of their last 6 games, and it was their only second 3-game losing streak of the year. And you know, so I was asking just like, what is it like when you're facing this kind of adversity really kind of for the first time? And he basically was like, it's kind of amazing that we're nearly at the end of June and that topic's coming up.
Right.
And so like for them, I think it's like, hey, like these things happen. And I think it helps that they have a really veteran clubhouse. There's guys that have won championships. You have Justin Turner, Tucker's won one, Dansby Swanson's won one. So there's a lot of guys that understand that, like, you're going to have a bad week, potentially, or you're going to have a bad series, and that you can't overreact to that. And, you know, Craig Counsell talking to us before the series finale today was kind of asked about that. And, you know, he basically was like, you can't worry about that. Like, you know, they're at the midpoint of the season with the completion of the series finale, and you can't worry about what's happened in the past. You're going to expect more bumps. And basically he was like, if this past week was our biggest bump of the season, then we're going to have a pretty good year. And so I think they've had the mentality of like, the day happened, you have to move forward. Obviously easier said than done, but I do think coming back and winning 8-0, getting the performance they got from Boyd, I think definitely is a big thing, just like confidence wise of, hey, like, look, we're still who we think we are. 2 games isn't going to define that.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting that, like, nowhere in that conversation, the fact that it was the Cardinals came up. And that's been something really interesting about this series. After they had a win, Nolan Arenado talked to us and he talked about it was nice to play meaningful games against the Cubs. Mm-hmm. He was very specific about it. He said he's having a blast. He's very excited to come to the ballpark. He said this is what you know, this is why he wanted to be a Cardinal. This is part of why he wanted to stay a Cardinal, though he wasn't guaranteed it was going to happen. But this is what he saw. Meaningful games in the standings against the Cubs. This first time in a while, not as long as maybe people think, but first time in a while that they've been this good this late in the season. And yet Craig Counsell really downplayed it as if he's laundry blind, right? Like, I don't see the logo on the other team. Is that – what do you make of that?
I mean, I think part of it is their schedule to start the season was insane.
Nuts.
That, like, in the first 3.5 weeks of the season, they're already finished playing the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
plus playing some other team. Like, the A's were still playing well at that point and stuff. So they didn't play a team
under...
Well,
you had to go to Sacramento, yeah, right? One of the first teams.
Yeah. And so they didn't play a team under 500 until, the final weekend of April going into May when they played Pittsburgh. So, like... Yes, the Cardinals-Cubs rivalry, you know, I think objectively is really good for baseball and when they're both playing well. But I think for the Cubs right now, I mean, they've had a lot of gauntlet checks to get to even this point. And I think, too, just their focus is so long-term. And it'll be really interesting because they play, I think, the last series of the season against each other at Wrigley, which could be really compelling. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they just kind of mirror Council, and he's very, like, you focus on the day. You know, obviously, you're aware who you are playing, but, like, you can't ride the highs or lows based on the opponent. And so I think that's kind of a message that's resonated, especially when you have a lot of veterans in the clubhouse. But, yeah, I think that has been an interesting component to it. I think for both of us, too, like, obviously, you've been in St. Louis forever, and I'm from Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
I grew up in Chicago and, like, can remember those big Cardinals-Cubs games with Pujols and Mark Pryor and all those. So, like, it's interesting just the dynamic. And I wonder, too, how much of it is you have, at least on the Cubs side, you don't have too many players other than, like, maybe Ian Happ and Nico, who were a part of any compelling Cubs Cardinals games when they were both good.
So I
wonder, like, it's just not, you're just playing a really good team, and it'll be interesting, I think, what the environment in Wrigley, I think, will feel a little different maybe for Cubs players when, you know, I think Cubs fans will obviously be bringing some energy of dislike to Wrigley.
it's an interesting point, because obviously Nolan Arenado knew it because he's a baseball fan, but he also was transported into this team when Adam Wainwright was still here, Yadier Molina was still here, and then Albert Pujols returned. And then Albert Pujols has the home run in a 1-0 game at Wrigley Field when they're having the time of their lives as the Cardinals. And so you could see why that has such prominence for him. And if it does for him, then it carries over to the guys who are around him constantly, Lars Nootbaar, Ryan Helsley, Pedro Páez, all those guys.
Wilson, who obviously, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Wilson, who brings the history to it.
Yeah.
And so the Cardinals are going to side with him on it. And Wilson has his own, you know, rivalry, the one-man rivalry with the Cubs that the Cardinals just get to come along for. So you're right. But from the other side, the Cubs aren't. And it does seem like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it does almost seem like Craig was trying to purposefully downplay that. And I wonder how that plays in Chicago. Because, candidly, I've covered those games that you were talking about. Tony La Russa, Dusty Baker going back and forth. And I don't think I've had a manager for the Cardinals, in fact, I know I haven't, who has downplayed the rivalry. Mm-hmm. Like, they, if anything, they might let you hype it up a little bit, but they've all leaned into it to certain degrees. And there was Craig the other day saying, I'm not going to be your fight hype man here.
And I think, honestly, that's just Council's personality. I think
he would do the opposite, though, with Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, and I wonder, too, like, the dynamic of you don't want to make the series bigger than it is for the team that's in first place. Like,
great point.
You're just wanting to continue roll along at the very minimum, you know, in a 4-game series, leave with the same lead that you came in. And I think making it bigger than it is, you know, from his perspective, might create pressure that's unneeded for the team that, you know, you're the one that's on top of the division. You're looking ahead. You don't want to, you know, bring more emotion to a moment that you feel like right now it might not need that.
That is what he's doing. He is saying this is just another team.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to even play into the reality of it, and in that way he wants to strip the Cardinals of being a threat.
Right. And like, say that final series of the season, if there's an opportunity to knock the Cardinal or prevent the Cardinals from making the postseason, if the Cubs already have a spot, like, I'm sure there will be some, you know, he will still be...
Shenanigans?
I don't know about shenanigans, but, like...
Well, there'll be shenanigans.
I think...
It'll be, like, first pitch, and Ollie will be like, we don't have your lineup yet.
True, very true. Yeah. Craig is good at that. I just think, like, he's very good at reading the moments of when to tap into those things.
Yeah.
And I think right now, they don't need it, and that they're just, they've, even though they had a tough stretch over the past week, you don't want to make it a bigger thing than it is. And so I think that's just my read or vibe of it.
What kind of, okay, so the whole world knows, well, the whole baseball world knows, and maybe good portions of the world know that Kyle Tucker, one of the, by now everybody should recognize, one of the best players, one of the top outfielders. Obviously, everybody's whispering what he could get as a free agent and sort of comparing, contrasting with what Juan Soto got last year. That's not a coincidence. Soto's a far bigger name and has been on bigger stages, but Kyle Tucker's really good. From that perspective, the Cubs have one guaranteed year with him. What kind of urgency is on the Cubs to win now, and how much that inform what they're going to do in the coming weeks with the trade deadline?
I think it's complex. I mean, you look at the roster and how well this team has done, given that they were without their two best pitchers for 7 weeks and added on to their success and their wins. But this is an ownership that does not believe in big contracts. I mean, I interviewed Chairman Tom Ricketts in October after, or whenever it was after Juan Soto signed or was about to sign, and asked him about it, because like the biggest contract the Cubs have ever given out is Dansby Swanson's $177 million. And so I asked him on the topic, like, and he's made very clear, like, philosophically, he does not believe in those kinds of deals, that they aren't beneficial to the team, that, you know, they can cripple you down the line. And so it would take a huge reversal of belief and financial commitment to give Kyle Tucker the kind of contract that'll keep him in Chicago. And like another ripple of that is Jed Hoyer does not have a contract after the season. It's an expiring, he's in the last year of his 5-year deal. I think certainly he has shown a sense of urgency given that context, even though, you know, he's downplayed that element to certain decisions a little bit. But acquiring Kyle Tucker is his probably most aggressive move as team president of leading baseball operations. He went after Alex Bregman and then talked about basically saying ownership wouldn't give him clearance to go beyond a certain financial commitment to Bregman and wouldn't give the opt-out after 2 years instead of one. And so that's very signaling of like he knows like what's on the line here, and they should be all in at the trade deadline. Like, you have to take advantage. You don't know that Pete Armstrong is going to replicate this performance next year. You probably should operate under the assumption that there's a decent chance to maybe very good Kyle Tucker is only wearing a Cubs uniform this season. So yeah, they have the prospects to be able to make some you know, significant moves. The market probably is not going to be a buyer's market, which will complicate things. But yeah, they should be aggressive in a division that's clearly winnable.
What do you think the future is for Jed Hoyer? Do you have a feel? Is it get in and you get to move on? Is it get a pennant? Is it not that simplified as results based decision on? And is it both sides? Is it also Jed's decision on whether or not he wants to continue with this?
Yeah, I could definitely see it being a both sides situation. And I mean, again, you know, asking Tom Ricketts about that and his future, you know, I said, like, does the team need to make the postseason for, you know, Jed to stay? And he didn't say yes or no. I mean, that's a, you know, a pretty clear opportunity to like say that no, it goes beyond just what the team record is. Like, the expectations, they make the playoffs. And so I think that is very much tied to Jed's future with the organization. And from like Jed's perspective, you know, he's a very pragmatic, you know, person. Like, when you listen to him talk about the decisions, like trading away that core was not an easy decision in 2021. And not, I don't think every front office, you know, the head of every front office would take that same approach to, you know, moving on from players who meant so much. So if you're him, there might be some frustrations that you can't get the approval to sign an Alex Bregman. Like, thinking about what that, having Alex Bregman in this lineup would do, I mean,
oh my,
it would be,
well, his contract would have surpassed Dansby Swanson's.
Yeah, I think
even with the limit, the cap that they put on it, right? It would have started with a 2.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah, yeah. That would have radically changed. Well, that's it's interesting you bring that up. I do want to ask you, like, how different the Cubs would look just with Justin Steele. Like, how big would their lead be if they just had him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be significant. I mean, when you look at, I remember I wrote it when, you know, he went down for the season. Like, I think he, since he transitioned to a starter, I think it was in 22, he's like 12th in the majors among starting pitchers in ERA in the, over the last 3 seasons. Like, I mean, his consistency is pretty remarkable. And so, yeah, that is it's a huge loss. And so, obviously, having Matthew Boyd and what he's done has made a huge difference. But again, like, Boyd's already thrown his most innings since 2019, and it's not even July. So, like, you have a lot of questions of, like, what are you getting out of these guys in the second half? What can Kate Horton do over the next, you know, 3 months? And so, yeah, so they have some tough questions to answer, and it'll be interesting, too, how much salary ownership will allow them to add to this year, let alone potentially future years, depending on the player.
I'm really intrigued by where Craig Counsell fits into all this, too, because it was a big thing when he was going to become a free agent, and he clearly wanted to use the opportunity as a manager to do what free agency does for players, which is drive the salary up. He saw an opportunity to benefit himself,
yeah,
but also because of his position, because of the success he had, and also because of his experience as a player, to drive up the ceiling. And he ended up not with New York and the Mets, where a lot of folks just kind of connected the dots to where will they pay a lot of money and where does he have a connection, but with the Cubs. With his contract, which was the largest ever at the time and is now the second largest to Dave Roberts, what kind of influence does that give him on the direction of this team and what this year is about in a way that maybe other managers don't have in a very front office-based era of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is involved, you know, in the off season when they're evaluating what the options are. You know, like, he reached out, I think it was early this season when they were, you know, going to claim Pomeranz and promote him. Like, you know, he reached out and has that connection. And I think it helps that, like, he's a pretty respected name in the sport. And so, but within, like, the front office, like, I mean, when he first came in, I mean, he was going into the office regularly and, you know, he had his own little, like, spot in the office that Jed would joke that they would walk by and just, like, always see the back of his head. But yeah, he certainly has influence, and he's also, I think, importantly, not afraid to voice his opinion and maybe push back with some of the front office perspectives. And
with the contract comes a mandate and some influence. I mean, yeah, that's what it is, right?
Well, and also, I think, too, like, that's also why they brought him in, because they respect
that perspective
as well. And, like, you know, because he was, you know, doing stuff in the Brewers front office before managing. And so, like, they respect that perspective from him. And so, like, even if it's, like, stuff like, you know, the Cubs had a stretch where, like, a couple guys injured their obliques. And, like, you know, the front office is going to want to delve into, like, oh, is there something happening? It's like, no, it's baseball. Like, the manager is not, like, wanting them to worry about something like that. Like, it's more,
right,
what are we doing, like, in terms of, like, biometrics and making sure their shoulders are healthy and not, like, fluke things because guys are creating more torque than ever. So yeah, so, like, I mean, it's definitely collaborative. I mean, he's not, you know, I think it's more, you know, I think some managers where it's like you talk to, you know, when you're asking them leading up the trade, I'm like, oh, like, have you told the front office what you want? And, you know, it's more the reaction of like, oh, like, that's their thing. Like, you know, I'm just, you know, running things in the clubhouse. Like, no, like, Craig's involved in that and pretty in the loop of understanding what is going on behind the scenes too, which, you know, is, again, what they wanted. They wanted that sort of collaboration.
Can he elevate the temperature a little bit to push to be a little bit more urgent? Do you see that's something that he would do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't I don't think he would go and set demands. And also, I think a lot of it is stuff that's even out of Jed's control. Like, if right. ownership is going to say, like, I'm only going to let you add $5 million to salary this year, or, like, you can only add somebody who has a contract that runs through the end of next season, because they've pretty much lined up with the potential lockout coming that all of their main contracts end after next season. So I think there's limitations more on that end of things that could prevent moves from happening versus, you know, Craig setting demands of this is what I want. I think, too, like, because he's involved, I think he understands what the team is pursuing and has a good grasp of, I think, an ability to bring out the best in the group that he does have.
He also has a paycheck that suggests, you know, hey, you're getting maybe the money that would go to a reliever. So he has to be aware that while we think in terms of, like, player payroll, it's baseball operations payroll. And so if you have a manager who's high-priced and all of a sudden you're wondering why didn't they go sign Phil Maton,
right.
you know, there's an equivalency there. What's your sense of the Cardinals? I mean, you start the year in Arizona and head off to Japan, and you got to imagine that the Cardinals are going to be as distant in the standings as they are geographically from your thoughts at that point. What do you make of them? I mean, your first look at them in person, what do you make of what you've seen here?
I mean, I've been impressed. At least in the first three games, I mean, it seems like they play a pretty clean brand of baseball. I mean, Nolan Arenado is still ridiculous at third base. And I mean, I think really, like, the pitching has been impressive. And generally speaking, obviously the 8-0 loss notwithstanding, but, like, they just seem to be, like, a generally solid team. And, like, yeah, I think definitely a surprise. Like, when I, you know, was reading your stuff and reports that, you know, they really weren't going to be doing a whole lot this offseason, that didn't seem to bode well, you know, especially with the, you know, when you see other teams, what they did. And so I'm curious to see, like, you know, can this group that seems like it's a really good collection of players that complement each other well, how that stacks up ultimately over a 6-month season versus a team like the Cubs that have, at least on the offensive end, like we said, more name brand star players. And I do think the pitching has been the most interesting part and how they've been able to navigate that without really bringing anybody too notable into the mix.
It was about 10 years ago, maybe 9, 11 years ago, so give it a 10. It was at the GM meetings, and I talked with then Cubs club president Theo Epstein, and he told me, he was like, everybody in the division just kind of waits for the Cardinals to put the pedal down and become the big spender that we perceive them to be because of the support of the fans, because of they were about to get a new TV deal that was going to be outsized for the number of, for their population and for their market size. And Theo was like, everybody just waits for that moment when they really flex, because they obviously were able to make a play or try to keep Albert Pujols, so they have that in their toolbox. It was a few months later or a year later, they made a play where they were going to take on Giancarlo Stanton's contract, so they have that in their toolbox. And his point was, like, just when are they going to put the pedal down? Things have changed. They're not selling tickets like they used to. There is some, you know, there is some acrimony with the fan base. There is some hesitation even to embrace this team. You see that. I mean, these are usually packed houses. So now it's almost like the question has shifted to the Cubs, and the division waits for them to act like a big market team with their own network, which they're one and few and far between, and they're the only one that doesn't act like it. The other ones, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers. So will the Cubs ever act like that? Because they could financially absolutely crush this division. There's no other way to describe it. Will they ever, or do they use the division as a reason not to?
Yes. I mean, they haven't said that, but I remember, again, asking in October, early November, Tom Ricketts that, and about the spending, because it's one of the fans, understandably, most frustrating components to, you know, what this team has been. And he basically said, if divisions were determined by how much money you spend, we'd win it every year, but that's not how it goes. You need to have you know, developing of your prospects.
But it could. This guy.
I know. And yeah. he was like, well, that.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, yeah.
It seems like this one could be.
Yes. And, well, yeah. And especially when you look at, like you said, the other team, like, Pirates aren't going to spend. The Reds have their own spending issues. You know, if you know, Milwaukee, obviously a big part why Craig left was they were never going to be big players.
It will always be the smallest market.
Exactly. Yeah. So, really, you're down to the Cubs and Cardinals.
And the Cardinals say they're not going to spend.
Exactly. And so, I think that's what frustrates fans is you're choosing not to. It's not that you can't. It's you're choosing not to. And I think, especially when fans come to Wrigley and they see the new sports book, they see everything that's been built up around the ballpark, which is generating revenue. And as much as the, you know, obviously the team has their baseball operations budget and what goes into that, the team has many revenue streams, clearly, you know, obviously even beyond just selling tickets and you know, they're on pace to hit 3 million fans for the first time in a few years. So they can, and ownership has really pushed this idea that you have to develop prospects. For sustained success, you can't just open your checkbook. So it doesn't seem that they're willing to go down that path. And as long as they aren't, you're going to allow the other teams who maybe are better in other areas of development or, you know, what have you. It allows the division to stay tight. It's a very fascinating concept. I think winning the 2016 World Series was in some way, obviously, one of the best things that happened in the organization. But I think on the flip side of that, because they won it with so many homegrown players that were not being paid very much at that point, created this idea that you can win a World Series, or like you see the Diamondbacks and Phillies get into the World Series as a sixth seed, that there's avenues to win, get to the postseason, and get to a World Series without having to always pay, or rarely, I guess, pay for the kinds of contracts that you know, fans obviously want to see.
I had a conversation recently about how that's fool's gold, how that notion is increasingly becoming fool's gold, because everyone will point to the Kansas City Royals, right? They went to back-to-back World Series. Look at the team they had. Homegrown. Okay, that's cool, but do the math on it. The teams that are spending more are getting to the playoffs more often, more consistently. Those are taking up spots. And so you can point to the Phillies, you can point to the Royals, you can point to Arizona making it, right? Good for them. But you know what? That's the one team. And there are now 16 teams vying to be that one team. Are you comfortable with a 1 in 16th chance of when you're going to have a chance in the playoffs, and hope the timing is right that your pitching gets hot?
Yeah.
And this notion that these teams are selling fans, they're like, we're going to go homegrown. We're going to go be the Arizona Diamondbacks. We're going to be that scrappy. Okay, one team gets to do that. And it's not consistently anymore. The Royals broke them. I mean, they were lucky to get two.
Yeah.
But, you know, last year, 2 years ago, Phillies, who spend a lot,
right,
are this year's Detroit Tigers, are next year's, you know, Seattle Mariners, are next year's St. Louis Cardinals. And you know what? Then the carousel won't find you again for another 11 to 12 years. That's not a way to go about contending. It's a very weird time in baseball, but no one seems, for a bunch of front offices that want to do the math, they're not doing the math on the probability.
Yeah, and I think that's what frustrates a lot of Cubs fans is, you know, they were told when this team is ready to compete, money will be spent. And it, I guess, has to a certain degree, but not to the point that it should be, that you would argue, like, a big market should be spending. When the owner is citing the Diamondbacks getting to the World Series as a sixth seed, that all you need is a chance once you get into, you just need to get into the postseason, then the projections of wins that you're trying to reach isn't 95 to win a division. It's 88, and you hope maybe that's all it takes that year to get in.
Payroll efficiency.
Exactly. And so, I think that's what has made Cubs fans the past few days in particular stress out over a week slump, because for them this feels like, okay, we finally have a shot to not only win the division, but like be one of the best teams in the league. Where's, I don't know that they have a lot of trust that the front office and by extension ownership is going to invest in the roster at the trade deadline like they should. But yeah, like you cannot waste a season with Kyle Tucker doing what he's doing and Pete Crow Armstrong, you know, on track for a 10-win season.
That's crazy.
Like, you can't, like, every season, I know Theo likes to say this, every season's sacred, and, like, they have to take advantage of that.
I like that phrase. Yeah, I mean, there is probably a sense in Cubs fans that every game off the schedule is one fewer game with Kyle Tucker, right? Like, yeah. I mean, that's what the front or not, that's what ownership has set up, right? And to change that feeling, you have to re-sign him, and it doesn't seem like that's likely.
Right. Yeah, Cubs fans have legitimate reason to fully expect that this will be the only season of Kyle Tucker, and it's on ownership to re-sign him to change that fan outlook or belief. And just nothing that has been said in the past indicates that's a path they will go down, as frustrating as that is for Cubs fans. And so it's really, you can't believe he's going to return unless it actually happens.
Will you let me run a crazy Chicago theory by you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Ready? All right. So I was born in Chicago, so I think most podcasts. So I have a fondness for it, but I have a lot of relatives who really care about the baseball teams there. And I hear a lot about the White Sox.
Yeah.
So here's my Chicago theory, is that what the National League Central has been unable to do to drive the Cubs to spend, the White Sox might. The White Sox just added a hedge fund owner who is in the mold of the current owners. And there's, you know, we'll see how this plays out, but it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And over the next, what, 4, 5, 6 years, that influence, that capital is going to increase. And they have already promised an increase in spending on that team, in part, yes, because they want to woo the city and the state to get a new stadium. All of that is real. You want to put a big team, big homegrown, or not homegrown, but star power team in a new ballpark. And I wonder if all these years of the NL Central being unable to push the Cubs to spend, all that time with the Cardinals doing what they did, being unable to push the Cubs to spend, I wonder if it's the White Sox in their own backyard that pushes the Cubs to spend.
Yeah, I do think that stretch where the White Sox were good, those like 2 years, which coincided with the Cubs not being good, definitely impacted the messaging for sure. I mean, they were, whereas like Theo and Jed were like, we're rebuilding when they came in, we're rebuilding, this is what it's going to be. It's going to be painful for a couple years, but you know, blah, blah, blah. They were not using the word rebuild, even though they were clearly, that's what they were doing. It was like retooling, you know, like getting back on track. And like, I don't think it's a coincidence that's the messaging that was going on as the White Sox were the fun new team of the majors. And
fascinating, great
point. I think part of it is you don't want to say you're going through another rebuild, but I do think you can't ignore when, I mean, like the White Sox seemed like for the next 5 to 10 years had the potential with the young talent they had to be the it team. And that 2-year stretch where they made the playoffs, even though they got swept by Houston, coinciding with the two of the Cubs' worst seasons in 10 years, I mean, I do think there was a shift happening in terms of the attention. And yeah, if that happens over like a 5-year stretch, if you're the Cubs, yeah, you might be a little worried, especially, you know, the Sox games are a lot of fun to go to as well. Their tickets are way cheaper, even if they were to increase in price. And so, yeah, I don't think that's a completely outlandish theory.
All right, we have a game to get to. Thank you very much for this conversation. So I just want to ask you last, where how do things shake out here? We have a very fascinating set of standings. Someone could argue that Cincinnati has the most talent in the division and still could pull away, especially with some of the pitching that they're going to get. Cubs have the most stars. As you said, the Cardinals have the most subplots because they could go anywhere. And the Brewers have the most recent success of winning, and the Pirates are the Pirates. They have the beautiful ballpark, I guess. Well, they do. They have a great ballpark. So how do you see all this shaking out, especially because – a year from now, we could be talking, and we know the Cardinals will have new leadership, and the Cubs could too, which is just a fascinating part of this. It also is going to be wild when the Cardinals go and sign Kyle Tucker. That is going to be the plot twist of all time.
That's how you rejuvenate the rivalry.
Yeah, that's what it'll have. It'll be the reverse Hayward. How the Cardinals do it.
There you go.
They do it. They have to go sign Kyle Tucker. They complete and utter. Heim Bloom comes in. He goes, yep. No, we're going to make a splash. My first year, I'm undoing the Hayward trade. I'm getting him back. And then Kyle Tucker can say, I don't like the aging core of the Cubs. Yeah, because Pete Crow Armstrong is getting into his mid-20s. Yeah. I don't really like that. No, we got to all figure out. How do you see this sorting out?
I mean, I think one thing, I think last I checked, the Cubs, the rest of their way, their strength of schedule is like second best. Like, they play the second weakest schedule, I think.
Cardinals are right behind them.
Yeah, so I think they're, like, right there. I think just because of just how unpredictable things can be, I lean towards just the star talent. Mm-hmm. I just think, for the inevitable slumps that are going to happen, which is, you know, the Cubs have experienced in the past week, like Kyle Tucker, I think, had like back-to-back three-hit games. Like, I just think the offensive star power the Cubs have, for me, gives them a slight edge over Brewers and Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens at the trade deadline, I mean, if the Cubs cannot add if the Cubs go out at the trade deadline and add another fourth, fifth starter, I'd have major questions on whether they can close it out and reach the postseason. If they truly, and I know maybe Sandy Alcantara, given his injuries and maybe some early season ineffectiveness, maybe doesn't carry that label anymore, but if you go out and get somebody who is perceived to be a top-of-the-rotation starter, I think the Cubs are just going to be hard to beat when you look at their lineup. And just even when they've had guys slumping, it's so deep that they've been able to weather it largely. So I'm giving the Cubs a slight edge, but they also, like, have not been able to show that they can finish it off, you know, when they have, you know, had a lead at certain points of the season in the past. I'm curious about your perspective. If you think the star power component versus, I mean, the Cardinals' pitching health has been incredible.
Yeah, that might catch up. I think their defense helps their pitching. They have elite, you know, they're the 1985 Bears of defense again. And they just are. They're very run suppression oriented. I think I'm real eager to see, and it's still unspooling, so there's no real answer here. But how close do they have to be in the standings, either up or down, like up five, down five, somewhere in that spectrum? Where does that fit? Where Mozeliak goes, you know what? This is my last year. The Cubs are vulnerable. I see what they're going to try to do. I want to undo something that I once did. If they're going to try to go get Sandy, I'm going to beat them to Sandy. Mm-hmm. And try to add Sandy Alcantara. He's competitive. Mm-hmm. And while he sees every move he makes this year as setting the table for what Heim inherits, mm-hmm. and he's talked about how he wants to do a clean slate, mm-hmm. well, Nolan Arenado's still here, mm-hmm. and that changes the equation. The way Alec Burleson's playing, some of these guys are playing, changes that equation. And I wonder if this is the time, if the clock ticking on his own contract mm-hmm. is what creates the urgency that I was asking about Kyle Tucker's contract. Yeah. And we haven't seen it. The Cardinals are they're really good at balancing on the fence post. I compare them sometimes to a turtle on the fence post, and they need someone to nudge them. I wonder if there's a point in the standings where they go, you know what, we're going to try to intercede, and we're going to go get the starter that the Cubs need.
Yeah.
And make a real ruckus.
And I would add, too, like, the Cubs have had a lot of things go right.
The bullpen, right?
I mean,
bullpen is defying odds.
Aaron's hasn't given up a run yet, and he hasn't pitched in the majors since 2021.
Yeah.
Chris Flexen is suddenly a really good multi-inning reliever. Caleb Thielbar has been lights out. Like, they've had so many things go right in the bullpen. And then you look at, like, Seiya Suzuki already has matched his home run total from last year. Like, Pete Crow Armstrong on pace to be a 10-win player. Kyle Tucker being Kyle Tucker. Like, they've been generally healthy. They really haven't, position player-wise, sustained big injuries other than losing Hap for, like, 10 days to an oblique injury. So, like, they've been very healthy on the position player side. So they've been pretty lucky to this point. So you can't, I don't think you can expect the bullpen to, with that collection of pitchers, to be that good for the next 3 months. So it's, are the next guys up going to be able to meet that standard? And so I think, like, that is another component to this equation is, can the luck still be on their side? And a lot, and I know, like, you know, you sometimes position yourself for luck to go your way, sure. But like, fluky things happen, and for the most part, I mean, obviously losing Justin Steele for the season was devastating, but they've been otherwise, I think, pretty fortunate for how things have gone this year.
Yeah, that's a great point. You need some fortune, you need some luck, but you also, like, need to, like, you know, push yourself in the direction of luck with decisions. Four games remaining in this stretch as we're talking. The Cubs had a chance to shove the Cardinals out and to make the choice for them. They really did. They could have just come in and said, and they still have the games to do it. You could go to Wrigley. They could have shoved them out. They could have said, no, you're a seller. Welcome to it. But I don't think they have. No. I'm not sure they will.
No, and I think it's going to make, obviously, the series finale in those three games at Wrigley, which holiday weekend at Wrigley, I mean, it's going to be hopping at the ballpark. So I think it's going to be really interesting. Yeah, like, you kind of have to deliver the kill shot sooner than later for the teams that are lurking, and this is a chance for the Cubs to do it before the trade deadline.
Thank you very much for joining me. This has been great. All right, now we'll go cover that game, and I look forward to seeing you at Wrigley. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Special thanks to Megan Montemuro of the Chicago Tribune for joining me. She does a great job there, and of course the baseball writing tradition of the Chicago Tribune is strong, going back to Mizzou's favorite son Paul Sullivan and a whole host of other writers who have covered the Cubs there. You can find that coverage at the Chicago Tribune. You can find Megan on Blue Sky. You can, of course, find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage, including all of the coverage from this past week's four-game visit from the Chicago Cubs in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and at stltoday.com. The best podcast in baseball is also available wherever you get your podcasts. Seriously, just find it there. It is available on iTunes, where you can rate and review and subscribe. All three of those things are helpful because they make they make sponsorships possible, and sponsorships make this weekly podcast possible. Here we are into late June, last week of June. We've nailed it every week of this season so far with BPIB, and it's because of subscribers like you that that's possible. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design, and it's produced here by me in the Post-Dispatch. Off on the road here shortly, and then on to Wrigley for the July 4th weekend. Looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.